Taking a ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your conductor, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, the codes of conduct, how to become a member, how to donate to the organization, get more involved with the organization, and dab into that learning center and go ahead and expand your mind, my brother. Expand your mind, my brothers and sisters. So once again, that's www.pactsinc.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com, especially for this month, in the month of May. In the month of May, because we're celebrating Black Women. It's our 2019 Black Women Celebration. In the month of May, say hey, Pat.
Hey.
There you go. You on point. I hear you on point. You hear me?
Yeah, you know I be trying.
Hey. What's going down in the Upper South?
The Upper South. That sounds kind of dirty, actually.
Okay, well, you man.
Upper South. You should say that to a girl. See what she say.
What's going on in your Upper South? My fallopians? I don't know.
You gonna get hashtag. Never mind.
What you got going on, man?
Not much, man. Same old, same. You know, same old, same. Man, ain't nothing changed from last week. So,
turn
hey,
yourself
how was
up
your week
bit,
going? Were you successfully able to do nothing?
Friday, yesterday, and today. So the last three days of it, I was successfully doing nothing. But the first couple of days, nah, I did stuff. So it wasn't a whole week off. I didn't have to go to work. But I did work. I got stuff done and make stuff happen. So
you got to lean into it a little bit. You got to bleed into it a little bit.
Not that much. But I was happy. One thing I am happy, and I already said it, but it's our Black Women Celebration Week. I mean, our month. So we kicked that off this week. So we're 5 days in, and we got five outstanding women that we're going to tell you all about and going to just spend some time celebrating Black women in this episode of Freedom Train podcast series. You know what I'm saying? We also want to talk about Facebook and its bans of Louis Farrakhan and a couple other people. Mostly going to focus on the Farrakhan thing because that's the only one that black people really care about. So, I mean,
we being
not?
Real about it.
Yeah, why not? And then we want to pay our respects to John Singleton and look at his legacy and the things that he's done in black film, for black actors, and for other black directors. Because John Singleton was a trailblazer and a legend, so we want to make sure we show him some love. But we're gonna start it off with the Facebook ban, Farrakhan and Facebook, or Facebook versus Farrakhan and like that. So I'm just going to put it to you like this. When I first heard, or when I first saw the headlines of Facebook is banning Alex Jones and some other people from Facebook because they're considered dangerous, my first thought was, so? the reason my thoughts were so, like, I'm talking about like one of them elementary south. No, like them really, like one of them kids, you tell a kid something that you feel and you say it from the depths of your heart and the kid looking in your eyes and be like, so?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt. Because I'm like, Farrakhan is too influential for Facebook to affect his light, his shine, his message, anything. Like, you can't sit here and tell me that Facebook banning Farrakhan is something that will be detrimental to Farrakhan, because it shouldn't be, because Farrakhan to me is bigger than Facebook. Like, what were your first thoughts, initial thoughts when you heard this, Pat?
Well, you said, I know you didn't mean to, but you said Alex Jones, but for me, that's really what it goes back to.
They banned him first, rather, but yeah, he wasn't in this group.
Right. When InfoWars was banned a while back, my first thought was, like I told you before the show, and like when we talked earlier in the group, you know, okay, so, you know, I was looking at Louis Farrakhan, I was looking at Umar Johnson, I was looking at a lot of other people who, you know, are on the fringes for the black community. And I was like, well, if they're kicking Alex Jones out, how much longer is it going to be until they start going after what they deem as black nationalists or black identity extremists or any of those other labels? So by the time this comes around, you know, earlier this week, for me it was just, you know, I didn't come at it from the perspective that you did with the soul, like it's not going to affect him. I just came at it, like for me it was like, well, duh, that's expected. You know, like they've been laying the table for this for a while. Now, I was, maybe because I wasn't really paying attention to the community, so I will say the outcry is something that I didn't think about, even as I was thinking about him being banned way, way, way back. I didn't really consider the public outcry that he's getting, because me personally, I'm not outcrying. And I honestly didn't think that the black community as a whole really gave a damn about Farrakhan like that. So it's been interesting to see that. But my initial thoughts was like, okay, well, that was expected.
Yeah. But, you know, as we were talking in the pre-show, I'm not sure how much, no, just looking at it from different angles. I'm not sure because I don't follow the account or anything. I haven't done no real research, but I'm not sure that most of the messages that are from Farrakhan's mouth were actually posted to Facebook by Farrakhan. And a lot of the things that Farrakhan says, he says because he don't give no fucks about how a lot of other people think. And he really shouldn't have to temper his message for other people, especially when he's speaking to his people. Now, I do think that others may be a little more strategic in how they put things out, but that's a whole nother conversation for a whole nother day. But if we're looking at it from that standpoint, that view, then I would say it's unfair that he's been banned from Facebook because messages of his has been put on Facebook by other people, and it wasn't necessarily put on by him. So him being banned because of things that he said, but it doesn't represent, I mean, well, it's not directly from him because Farrakhan himself or through that Farrakhan account didn't post the majority of these things that would have quote-unquote got him banned from Facebook.
Well, from reading a little bit of the Facebook announcement, just a little bit, it says that, you know, they've always banned individuals or organizations that promote or engage in violence and hate speech. And so, regardless of ideology, and it also, if I'm not misreading this, alludes to the fact that I'm trying to read and talk at the same time, and it's not working out. But anyways, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. If I'm right, I'm right. But it also seemed to allude to the fact that they look at the history of a person's account, which puts everything in a difficult space. Now, the question becomes, why do this now? Farrakhan has been Farrakhan for a long time, and actually his stance has softened over the years. If anything, it hasn't gotten harder. It's gotten softer as he's aged. So that begins to look real questionable. You know, what kind of public publicity are they looking at? What kind of, you know, what kind of move is happening here strategically? And we can all make our own assumptions about what's going on. I'm not trying to get into that because, quite frankly, we don't know what the ultimate goal of Facebook was with this. But what I can say is I agree with you when you say that this shit ain't going to really affect Farrakhan none. I can say that it's not going to diminish his impact on Facebook or Instagram, since we know that Facebook owns Instagram. People are still going to share his content. And if they trying to scrub his content totally from their platforms, they got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
They're going to be scrubbing a lot of people as well. And I don't know that they're even interested in committing those types of resources. And there's nothing that I've read that suggests that they will. But I will make the same point I made when we talked earlier. If you want to talk your shit, you need to make sure that the place you go to talk your shit is willing to let you talk your shit. Like Facebook, when you log on to use your Facebook account, you need to understand that that platform is not a government platform, and it's not your platform. That's a corporate platform owned by somebody else, a privately owned company. So even though it is publicly traded, it's still, you know what I'm saying, it's still not a publicly owned corporation. So not in that sense anyways. So if you really want to talk your shit, you need to go somewhere where you can talk your shit. Facebook has every right to put whatever restrictions they want on the service that they provide to their consumers, just like you as a consumer have every right to choose not to consume or to utilize Facebook services. For me, it's just that simple.
Yeah.
I talk a lot of cash shit, but if you go to my Facebook page, you won't see none of that cash shit up on there. And that's where we go back to what you said, Joe, earlier. People, and we're not speaking about Farrakhan no more. We're just talking about people in general now. You got to be smarter about what you put out into the public. And I think that's where the conversation about Farrakhan and other people being banned, I think that's where that conversation needs to go for the average person. Because for the average person, getting banned from Facebook basically eliminates their digital voice.
Yeah, like I was saying, like, all right, certain people, Facebook is their platform. For somebody like a Farrakhan, I just use him because, you know, that's what we're talking about, and mostly it's around this particular topic, but not everything in this topic is about him. But if Facebook is your platform and Facebook banned you, then you need to be mad, you need to be mad at yourself for various reasons. But yeah, because now your platform is in trouble. Farrakhan. Facebook was just a vehicle that can be used to get Farrakhan's message out to some people who are used to it and people who are not used to it. But the man is so out there that him being banned from Facebook is not that big a deal, but for certain people and certain things. So, yeah, so if I am, even me, if Facebook banned me, Facebook won't stop me if they ban me because I got other platforms. But if you utilize Facebook hard and you depend on Facebook, then you need to be cognizant about how you deliver your messages. And have you a place to where you have your place that's not Facebook, or some other place where you can deliver your messages and things like that. But it's just being strategic about what you're doing and how you're doing. But once again, this is not, like Pat said, this is not necessarily Farrakhan in this situation, because if Farrakhan can say what he wants, how he wants. And, yeah, all these, it, even if all these platforms ban Farrakhan himself from posting stuff, they're not going to be able to ban other people from posting Farrakhan stuff. And that's one of the main differences. That's what he's talking about. Like, you're not, a lot of people talk big stuff like they have the clout or the foothold in the community like that, and everybody don't. So, as you can see, well, if you've been on social media, you've been seeing a lot more Farrakhan messages and a lot more posts about Farrakhan because of the Facebook banning of Farrakhan and other people. But somebody like him, it won't stop him. It won't stop him. But for you others, it may stop you depending on how you utilize the platform.
And that's where we go back to, because I see, you know, celebrities and all of that is attacking Facebook either on Instagram or Facebook, which is funny because they own both of those, for banning Facebook or for banning Farrakhan. And it's just like, look, for one, y'all really need to start reading the terms of service. Because it's a lot of y'all pro-black people on Blog Talk Radio doing your shows, and you haven't read the terms of service. And a lot of y'all are doing shows on a daily basis that are illegal according to the terms of services because of the things that you're saying. So if you get banned from Blog Talk and you basically feel like you done wasted your $100 a month or however much money y'all are spending, now you're going to be mad at Blog Talk. But you shouldn't be mad at Blog Talk. You should be mad at yourself for not reading the terms of service and tailoring your message in a certain way. Now, we could all play the game of saying, well, yeah, but they targeted us, or they targeted him. That may be true. But the fact remains that you painted a target on your back, yet and still, and gave them something to shoot you with. Why would you do that to yourself? So this is where I go back to Big Up and what Joe and I are doing. Because we looked into Blog Talk. That's not the platform for us. It's a huge platform, but it's not the platform for us. So we started our own platform where we can talk our own shit and not have to worry about nobody pulling our stuff down or doing any of this stuff like this here or that there. Because it's our platform, it's our voice. We control the content and the distribution of that content. So even if somebody says you can't distribute your content here, they're not taking our content from us, and we still have other channels to deliver the content. You guys got to take that same approach. I know it's a lot of people on Facebook, but if you have a particular message, Facebook is not the venue for you to distribute that message. So, again, I'm just like, for you to get mad at Facebook for banning Farrakhan at this point, I think I understand it, I get it, but on another level, it shows that you haven't really researched and understood the platform that you're working with. I mean, and we see posts all the time, people just saying the craziest shit, and we're all like, well, how come nothing happened to this person? And, you know, I'm big on, yo, the reason why you probably getting suspended is because it's somebody that fucking flagged your post. They reported you. I know people that go through Facebook just reporting shit. That's what they do. You know what I'm saying? So if you got reported but the other person didn't, you know, we play those games. But at the end of the day, I'm not trying to get into all of that because that's semantics. It's a great conversation, but it's semantics. At the end of the day, people really just got to pay attention to the terms of service, the terms and conditions of service. Read the user agreement. You know, take care. And to me, this conversation expands beyond Farrakhan because, like you said, Joe, this really ain't going to impact Farrakhan any. It's not really going to mess with him much at all. So he's banned from Facebook and Instagram. He still got literally like a million other people that's going to post shit for him. And he still got Twitter and a couple other places where he can put out his own content. And the Nation still has their own website and their own places to put their content out directly. So, but the conversation for me, again, goes to the average person who's going to get mad at this and do something silly on their Facebook account and get banned, and then blame Facebook for them doing something silly. So that's kind of where I'm coming at it from is, all right, if you know the system is this way and you know people are fucked up, why do you put yourself in a position to be fucked up by fucked up people?
Well, I mean, yeah, because it's like we say, it's many different angles, lanes, and ways to think about this and look at this and break this down. But yeah, if you're gonna be totally dependent on these platforms to get your message out, then you need to be more, like I said, like he's saying, you need to be more strategic about what you're doing, how you're doing, what's being said, and all those things. That if you want to boss up like we did, we could say what we want to say, how we want to say it, when we want. Only thing you can really do to us is just not listen. But that don't mean we can't keep saying it.
Right.
So it's just certain things like that. Once again, I think, in my opinion, Farrakhan is in the same lane as us.
He is.
So they can ban his account all you want. If I was Farrakhan, I'd be, they banned me, but they don't know how trill I really am.
He probably is going to say something like that. He probably saying it right now.
Cannot be banned by Facebook because I own my own way, my brothers and sisters. You cannot shut me down and keep me down because I am smart enough to put myself and my people in a position for us to rise, my brother. So I sit back and smile as Facebook has banned me.
I mean, that's the same thing Alex Jones did. You think them banning InfoWars stopped InfoWars?
Hell nah.
InfoWars is still going. Now, did InfoWars take a hit? Of course it did. Because InfoWars got banned by damn near everybody.
Yeah.
But it's still going because he had his own website. He had his own content. He had his own distribution networks. And social media was just one channel. So, and I'm sure all of these big hitters that they done banned, it's not really going to affect them too much. Because they're all in that same vein. So that's why for me the question becomes, or the issue becomes, okay, for all of the other guys, the smaller people with smaller platforms who depend solely on one or two platforms to get their message out, you better read the terms of service, because if they'll ban Farrakhan, they damn sure will ban your ass. And you ain't going to get no public outcry.
Yeah. And like I said, those who support Farrakhan, I do understand why people would be upset for those who support him, upset of why he would be banned. In my opinion, I think it was unfair. I mean, you know, we've seen worse, but it was unfair. But like I said, I haven't done the actual research to prove, just from gut feeling. Most of the stuff that would have got Farrakhan banned wasn't posted by him. It was posted by a lot of people who take hold to his message. So in that regard, I would understand why people would be upset about him being banned. But at the same time, once again, him being banned would not stop Farrakhan's message or his movement. Or he might have gained a few more followers and members of the Nation because of
this. I'm sure his following has grown with him being banned. But I understand the emotionality over being upset with him being banned. I get that. What I don't understand, what I don't see or comprehend, is the logic behind it. So I get you being emotionally riled up, but logically, I don't understand how you could logically be upset, energized in a negative way by Farrakhan being banned. Because as you said repeatedly, and as I've said as well, it doesn't do anything to his platform. If anything, it strengthens his public image for the people that he wants to reach. And it doesn't hurt him anyway.
There's a lot of people caught up in their emotions, though, because, Snoop Dogg and a whole bunch of other folk did their videos, man. That said, well, you know, Snoop react to everything.
Yeah, let me say this real quick. No offense to Snoop, but for him to be such an OG, he is emotional as shit.
Yeah.
Well, I ain't even got to say no offense to Snoop, because, I mean, if you take offense to it, you take offense to it. But that dude is just totally drug around by his emotions.
Yeah. I agree. He's very, 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 very emotional, and he'll react. So.
And it's fine to wear your heart on your sleeve, but it also makes you easy to predict and easy to manipulate.
Well, Bruce Lee told you that. I mean, he did.
So I don't know, man. I don't know, man. I'm at the point where I get it, like you said, emotionally, I get it. But logistically, logically, you know, even in terms of strategically, it's so insignificant to me. You know, it really, and at the end of the day, even if whether it's fair or not, and we all know the world ain't fair. If the world was fair, we wouldn't be in the situation we in. Fair or not, and I don't think it's fair, because like I said, Farrakhan has gotten softer as he's gotten older, not harder. But fair or not, just or not, whatever it is or not, the fact remains that Farrakhan has an image. Farrakhan has, in fact, said some things. And so if Facebook is considering the lifespan of Farrakhan's political career, then they could easily justify banning his account. It wouldn't be a great sell for those of us familiar with Farrakhan, but it would be enough to get by for the millions and the vast majority of people who aren't familiar with Farrakhan. So at the end of the day, can you really say that they're wrong for doing it? And then they did a real good job of banning more than just Farrakhan. You know, that most of the people they've been banning have been right-wing people, you know, extreme right, white supremacists, and other guys like guys and girls like that, organizations that see the black community as an enemy. So when they mix Farrakhan in with a group like that, you know, it becomes a real easy thing for Facebook to sell that. So, hey, man, I'm not mad at Facebook at all. I'm going to say that and be honest. You know,
yeah, man,
even if
yeah,
it was
I'm,
a strategic move or whatever.
I understand why other people are mad. I do, but I'm not mad. I get it. I'm not mad, but at the same time, if we really looking at it like we're supposed to be looking at it, like it's really not going to hurt him. All it's going to do is just improve his stock, improve his profile. Have more and more people learn more about him, and more people posting his stuff. Like you say, they're gonna be there all day trying to delete all the content that contains his images, his messages, videos, and things. You'd be there all day trying to do that.
Yeah, because just as fast as you could delete them, even if you create an algorithm, people, you got to remember, algorithms require computer power to run. So it ain't as simple as we just going to create an algorithm that's going to delete everything with Louis Farrakhan in it. There's still money involved in creating the necessary machine work to power the software. So to do something like that, it would be expensive. I'm not saying Facebook couldn't do it. Of course they can, but they would be paying the cost to do it. And so, you know, that becomes the question of how much they want to. And that's all interesting conversations. Like you said, there are a bunch of different angles to this. I'm not mad at Facebook because I see from a strategic standpoint, even if we want to say Facebook is a white supremacist organization, from a strategic standpoint, banning Farrakhan is a brilliant move. You know, if you want to say Facebook is this or that, however you want to look at it, it's a great move by Facebook. It's a strategically great move. It's a tactically great move. Even the way they mixed him in with all of the other guys, it's a great play by Facebook. And if you don't think Facebook is a friend of black people, then you should respect the move even more. And you should get your ass off Facebook. But with that, I'm done. I know, because I know we're dragging this.
I know we're coming to that. Get your ass off Facebook. He's been wanting to say that since we started.
Yeah, because I've been my ass off. I'd have been off of Facebook for about a year and a half, 2 years now. And so I look at all you people that complain about how Facebook is treating the black community, and I laugh at you. Because y'all are making those complaints while y'all are on Facebook. People are on Facebook talking about Facebook ain't shit. Well, if Facebook ain't shit and you here, what does that say about you?
You know, you trying to say ain't shit, dog.
Hey, you said you want shit.
You tripping, dog. We'll find out.
And Joe, because Joe makes, every time I say that, he's always like, Facebook's a useful tool. And Facebook is a useful tool if you're using it as a tool. But we know the vast majority of y'all are addicted. It's not a tool for y'all. It's y'all's life. It's become your source of news, your source of entertainment, your source of connection, your source of any sort of emotional feeling. Like, Facebook has become your life. Some of y'all would not be able to function without Facebook. Y'all are literally addicted to it. That is not
Most
a tool.
Most people don't use it as a tool. They, like you said, they are addicted to it. It's not a tool to them. It's life to them. And if Facebook is life, you know how people talk like that. It's is life. It is. If that is life to you, then, yeah, I don't know what to tell you.
And I bet those are probably the people that's upset about Facebook banning Farrakhan, the people that see that Facebook is my life, and they can take it from me.
I don't give a damn about them banning me because I am bigger than Facebook. Brothers and sisters, carry on with your lives.
I'm willing to bet, though, that a good chunk of those people do feel threatened because they feel like, you know, well, what happens if Facebook bans me and my entire life
is
Facebook?
All they did was remind you that they will ban your ass.
But they've been reminding your ass. How many of your friends have been put in Facebook jail? Like, the fact that we even have a term called Facebook jail, where motherfuckers feel like they're cut off from society. I ain't talking about the people that jokingly use it. I'm talking about the people that use it but legit feel like they've been placed in jail because they've been banned from Facebook for 2 weeks.
I guess I ain't radical enough on Facebook, man, because I ain't never been in Facebook jail.
I've been in once, but I can say the moments where I've been banned, I've been blocked a few times from Facebook. But in those moments, I was actually saying some wild shit on my page, and I can acknowledge that. And that, for me, it don't matter what the other people were saying. It don't matter what white people were saying, this, that, or the third. That I don't even play those games about whataboutism. I was saying some wild shit when I got banned. When I stopped saying wild shit, guess what happened? I stopped getting banned.
I just rather say my wild shit, like, face to face over the phone, like to whoever. I don't like the social media thing like that. I just rather say it to you or whoever the audience is. So that's why I like these podcasts and stuff like this. This is why I say my wild stuff. By the time I get social media, I didn't already say what I need to say. So,
well, at the end of the day, too, we got to remember, you know, your posts, especially those of you trying to get famous and trying to be social media influencers. You know, if you rub somebody the wrong way, they will report your ass on social media. So, you know, if you getting banned, and I think a lot of people be fronting. I think a lot of people know why they got banned, but they don't want to acknowledge it. So, they banned me from telling the truth. Yeah, maybe you were telling the truth. But at the same time, you can't call somebody a crack ass, slut, hoe, bitch that need to eat your asshole. You know, you're going to get banned from that. She's going to report you.
Yeah. Do like me and say it to them to their face or call them up and say it to them.
Right. Like, you can't, you know what I'm saying? You can't run up on a motherfucker and be like, I killed your motherfucking dog. How about that shit, bitch? Yeah, hey, man, you're going to get banned. You're going to get reported.
Yeah. Well, black people get mad a lot about that stuff on Facebook. But when other people, we're so used to not reporting stuff, so when somebody says it to us, we don't report it. We just cuss them back out.
Hey, well, guess what? They report your motherfucking ass. I bet that.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, they get to report on.
Right. Yeah, I report motherfuckers quickly. Right. When I'm on Facebook, because I do still log on to Facebook to share, like, Freedom Train stuff and stuff like that. But if I see some reckless stuff while I'm making a post, yeah, I press the report button. That made me an activist, don't it? In 2019, reporting people?
It can.
Yeah.
So,
anyways.
You know, shout out to the people.
What you got?
I stole your parting shot. You can't say it this time. But anywho, hey, man, so over the past last week, we had a legend die unexpectedly. A legend in Black Hollywood, a director, writer, a creator, somebody whose legacy touched many people. So I'm talking about the legendary John Singleton. He passed, unfortunately. He's a physical loss for the Black community, but not necessarily a loss. I don't like to say it's a loss because, like, John Singleton still impacts us, and everybody that he impacts still impacts us. So we physically lost him, but artistically and influentially and all these other things, John Singleton isn't lost. He's still here. He's just going to become more powerful. But, you know, he passed away on April 29th. And some of the most notable movies, Baby Boy, Four Brothers, Shaft, Boys in the Hood, High Learning. High Learning, one of my favorite movies. Woo, Time Out, Hustle and Flow, Black Snake Moan, Illegal Tender. Through the Lens Darkly, he was the executive producer for that, Independent Lens, TV series L.A. Burning. He was an executive producer, Rebel. He's an executive producer, the TV series Rebel Snowfall. He's an executive producer. He put Ice Cube on. He put Omar Epps on. He put Busta Rhymes on. He put the Tyrese and Taraji on. Cuba Gooding Jr., Lawrence Fishburne, Andre 3000. Mark Wahlberg, all these, like, he put so many people on in his movies. Hell, if it wasn't for him, Ice Cube wouldn't be a damn director. Look how many people that Ice Cube put on. It's kind of like if you're a football fan a fan of sports, you know how one coach, they have that coaching tree, and you see a lot of good coaches and a lot of good fruit come from that coaching tree, and that's one thing that we had with John Singleton. So I did want to spend some time just kind of showing some love and giving some fond memories of our favorite movies and things from John Singleton. So, Pat, when you heard about John Singleton dying, what were your thoughts? And also, what are some of your favorite moments from some of your favorite John Singleton movies?
Well, my first thought was, damn, you know, because I was just thinking about how old he was. And I actually had to Google it. It was 51, was, you know, suffered a stroke. Then I guess he went into a coma, I guess. And then, you know, he was removed from life support. And so, you know, it's kind of crazy because I'm always thinking about how Black people die young and how it seemingly, not all, but how, you know, with celebrities and certain high-profile figures, how death seemingly comes out of nowhere. Like, they're fine, and then they're dead, you know. And so you think back to, like, Bernie Mac and a couple other people. And so it was just kind of, you know, you had this moment where you accept the fact that, you know, death can come at any moment. And I don't necessarily view death as a sad thing, so it wasn't like I was sad or grieving, but it's just the idea that you could not be here anymore. So that's what popped in my mind. I know Boys in the Hood and Poetic Justice in particular I don't know if those were his first two front films, I do know that. What's up?
Boys in the Hood was his first in 91, and then in 92 he had Michael Jackson, the Remember the Time, the video shoot. So, yeah, Poetic Justice was his second movie. So, yeah, you were right. Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice was his first two movies.
Both of those movies had an extreme impact on me growing up in the hood. You know, and that whole movie is just one big-ass, long-ass, fond memory. You know, it'd be hard for me to pick out a particular scene in that movie that I like because I like so much about it. You know, and you're looking at even the cast, like, you couldn't convince me all the way up until maybe last year that Cuba Gooding Jr. wasn't still an A-star just based off of what he did in Boys in the Hood. Like, you know, like, so I was, like, riding with Cuba Gooding Jr., all the way up through, like, 2015, just based off of Boys in the Hood. But then, you know, you go into the whole Morris Chestnut angle, the Lawrence Fishburne, like, that whole cast was just phenomenal,
man.
On point. You know what I'm saying?
I can't even say it right. Furious Styles.
Yeah,
I say between Furious Styles, OG Bobby Johnson, and the character that Charles S. Dutton played in Menace to Society. As far as father figures, those are the top three contender for father figures in hood movie history, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah. I mean, that movie is just filled with so much that it's just crazy to think about it. And then when you go into, for me, Poetic Justice with Janet Jackson, and I think that was the first time I got to see Tupac show off his acting chops.
So that was your first time seeing Pac?
Yeah, that was my first time seeing him act in a movie. I heard some of his music, but that was my first time really seeing him do anything. And I was, you know, actually that's my first time seeing Janet Jackson acting.
Yeah, that was my first time seeing her act, yeah.
And then, you know, you started looking at the cast of that and what they became. You know, Regina King, she became something phenomenal in the community. Joe Torre never really picked up the way that I felt like he should have. But it's funny, motherfucker. So you go back to the, and then you go back through these movies, like you mentioned, Rosewood. Watch Rosewood. And I know we're from Florida where Rosewood happened.
Rosewood is an hour and 20 minutes away.
It was, the movie was obviously adjusted because it was a movie. But just the impact of that movie and how it made me feel about my state and doing research, Wu was actually probably, in my opinion, the most entertaining movie that I feel bad saying that because a lot of people be like, Wu? But, like, Wu was entertaining as shit for me.
He directed Wu?
Yeah, he was the executive producer of Wu.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, executive producer. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so Wu for me was like, I still watch Shaft. Baby Boy was cool. Too Fast, Too Furious. I'm looking at a list now, so I can go now.
Yeah.
Four Brothers, Hustle and Flow, Black Snake Moan. All of those were great movies. Not taking nothing away from none of them.
Yeah, look. Furious, I think we now that we're older, we can appreciate it more, but we kind of really slept on the dynamic of Furious Style and Angela Bassett. I forgot Angela Bassett's name in Boys in the Hood, but because Furious Styles always reminded me of my daddy. So in turn, Lawrence Fishburne always reminded me of my daddy. And that's one of the things that I really loved about Boys in the Hood is, like, that character, looking at that character, every time I looked at that character, like, when I say down from, like, the way he looked, like, the way Lawrence Fishburne looked in that movie, the hairstyle, the beard, the glasses, the button-up tucked into the jeans and whatever, like that's how my daddy dressed and walk and talk and move still to this day. So when I say he reminded me of my dad, that's because, like, I felt like, it felt like John Singleton looked at my daddy was able to observe my daddy and then made a whole character out of my daddy. Like, that's just how similar those two people are. So that's one of the things that had a profound impact on me for Boys in the Hood. It, you know, in addition to it being a great movie, a great storytelling movie, but also just the people that it spawned. Like, we sleep on our legends like John Singleton and Kenan Ivory Wayans and folk like that. Those are our legends who created real careers. Like, look at the careers that they created. Like, the people that they put on. It's like, ain't no dope. Like once again, like you're talking about Poetic Justice, even though Poetic Justice in itself didn't have the same type of message that Boys in the Hood, but the story that it told from that Oakland standpoint, and just being there, like you said, being able to see Tupac as an actor, being able to see Janet Jackson, and the whole dynamics of them dealing with domestic violence and all those things there. And then, for me, Higher Learning is one of my favorite movies of all time. Higher Learning is, like, you know, we grew up in environments where I always expected to go to college, and Higher Learning was one of the reasons why I always expected to go to college. And I want to get into some shit like that. I want to fight some white boys when I got to college because of Higher Learning. I know that ain't the best thing to take away from, but still, but it also made you going into high school, going into college, because Higher Learning came out in 95, so we're in middle school. But it made you feel good about being black too, though. And that's one thing that I do like about John Singleton. He still had that within his videos, within his movies, rather, making you still, like, not hate your blackness or whatever, not being able to look at white people like, damn, I want to do that. Like I said, Rosewood, Shaft, Baby Boy, Too Fast, Too Furious. Like, his impact has a lot. Like, Rosewood was that movie, like, I first watched that at night, and it had me hot with white people. But I was glad that story was told, though.
And Higher Learning, I loved Higher Learning because I've always been in the track, and you had these, you know, like, he was going to school on a track scholarship, you know. But the other thing, and that was also, I do remember that was Tyra Banks' first time in the movie.
Yeah, Deja.
So, but it was just, to me, there was also kind of, and I know it wasn't intended that way, but the way my mind processed it, there was like a continuation of the characters, because he was using a lot of the same actors in all of the movies, and the stories that they were told were from a perspective where, in my mind, all of the characters kind of got tied in together at various points in the life of these people. But I thought Poetic Justice was a beautiful film. I thought all three of these films was classic. Poetic Justice is a classic. Higher Learning is a classic. Boys in the Hood is definitely a classic. And Boys in the Hood is interesting because growing up in the hood in a small town like Tallahassee, I still felt some connection to what the characters were going through in the film. And I know it was shot from like a L.A., Los Angeles, California, West Coast hood vibe, which is a different vibe than it is on the East Coast, and especially than what it is in the South. But you could still feel like a connection to the characters and what they were going through. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I think that's one of the great things about his movies. Because, all right, look, hood classics. Baby Boy, Poetic Justice, Higher Learning, Boys in the Hood. Those are five of the hood classics that he has himself. But then, like, Friday is especially the first Friday. Right? You can put all three of them in there, but especially the first Friday is a hood classic. So that's a fruit from the tree of John Singleton. I mean, it just, you know, it just, like, think about it that way. Like, John Singleton is responsible for a lot of movies that inspired a lot of us to be creators. Like, black art, black creativity, black ownership, black direction, black people being in front, black people controlling their destinies and doing what they need to do. Like I say, like, people like John Singleton and Kenan Ivory Wayans,
Robert Townsend.
There you go. I was looking at his face. I couldn't think of his name, but yeah, Robert Townsend. I was about to call him media man, but Robert Townsend, like people like that who go out and make it happen. Spike Lee, but who make it happen, man? You like they need to be celebrated and really praised. Like we should have thought about something like this earlier, not just wait to end and die ourselves with this platform to be like looking at our trailblazers, man. It's like John Singleton was an amazing person, man. And he dated Tyra Banks too.
We can do that moving forward because I do know that we've had plenty of conversations about his films and him, especially with regards to Boys in the Hood. So it's not like we waited until he died to give him glory. We just didn't talk about it in the show. And so we can definitely take steps to rectify that. Maybe we create a segment where we recognize the living legends, once or twice a month. We can talk about that offline. But, I won't go back to Woo, because you interrupted me when I was talking about how entertaining that movie was. And I know I'm one of the few people I'm one of the few people I've ever met and I really enjoyed Woo.
Yeah, you are. Woo was cool. Woo was a movie that you would watch, but Woo ain't something that, it ain't at the top or the middle of the list either.
But I enjoyed Woo. I did. I thought it, and maybe it's because of how young I was and where I was in my life at the time, but I thought Woo was funny. I thought it was entertaining. It had a lot of, and at the time, let me say this. At the time that Woo came out, I was in love with anything that was flooded with black people. And I really think that's what it was. That's what really drew me to Woo. Because like most of John Singleton's movies, it was filled with black people. I mean, you had Tommy Davidson in there, Jada Pinkett, Dave Chappelle, LL Cool J. You just go down the line. It was filled with black people. And it was at a time where black people were black movies, what we have to understand, from my perspective, black movies always fit in like one or two categories. You know what I'm saying? So you either got the hood classics that talk about the struggle in the streets and overcoming this, that, and the third, or you got the romance movies. Like, and that's literally it. And so for me, while Woo was a romance movie, I viewed it as more of a comedy than a romance movie.
It was.
And so for me, it was in that space where, like at the time, it was just something new and different for me. And so that, those are, like the reasons why I liked it, you're not hearing me say it was a good movie. You're hearing me say it was entertaining. And it
in my life. You liked it. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's like there are movies out there that are great bad movies that I like. Like, my favorite bad movies. Like, you have those type of movies.
Like Pootie Tang.
Yeah, Pootie Tang was a good bad movie.
Nah, Pootie Tang was, yeah, okay. You said a good bad movie. Yeah, because Pootie Tang was bad, but it was entertaining as shit.
Yeah.
Ladies Man is another one. Not a great movie. But very entertaining, in my opinion. But then that calls us into question, if a movie's entertaining, doesn't that make it good?
Well, to me it do, but the majority consensus may not like the movie, but I don't give a shit if the majority consensus don't like the movie. If I like it, I could get care less about what anybody else like, because if I like it, then it's a good movie.
But I mean, like you pointed out, Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice, Higher Learning, Rosewood, and Baby Boy, and Hustle and Flow. Let's not forget about Hustle
and Flow. Yeah, Hustle and Flow. Hustle and Flow did hustle. I mean, it showed the South in a way that the South wasn't showed, like Southern hip hop and things like that. That's one of the things I do appreciate about Hustle and Flow, because he produced that. Yeah, he was producing Hustle and Flow.
But those are five movies. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Even the L.A. burning, 25 years of the L.A. riots, that. Stuff
well,
like
I'm
that.
Just pointing out, like, those are six movies that we could consider classics in the black community, right?
Yeah. They're staples in the black community. Those are movies that black folk, when they come on, black folk gonna watch. Black folk gonna always watch these movies, and we're gonna pass the movies down to our kids and keep the hood classic. Sorry,
you know what's sad is that I don't know that the last part of what you said is true. I don't know that parents are showing their kids Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice, or Higher Learning right now. I know they're not showing them Rosewood.
Well, I know, like, when I go to these college campuses, certain, I say baby boy sometimes, and some of these college students don't know what I'm talking about. It make me want to fight them. So I get the parents, y'all better start passing down these hood classics, man.
Right. You know, I don't really appreciate, like, I don't care too much for the blaxploitation era, but I enjoy the fact that my dad, you know, sat me down and, all right, you know, I got a chance to watch Superfly when I was a kid. Not just Superfly, because I don't want to put that on my dad, because he might hear this and be like, don't say that because your mama. But not just Superfly, but, you know, The Last Dragon.
Yeah, see, movies like that. Cooley High, stuff like those are movies
right.
that was supposed to be passed down. Not
right.
necessarily, like, I'm not a big fan of, like, Superfly and the Mac. And
I'm
movies.
Not either.
I'm really not.
I'm
really
not,
not
either.
I would say Shaft more so than them, because Shaft more so of a hero. Like, if he was in the movies, like, Black Dynamite is a movie you can pass down. Black Dynamite was trying to, yeah, he had mm-hmm. pimp stuff, but he was trying to clean up the hood. Even
they got to be a little bit older for Black Dynamite, though. They got
right,
to shrink.
But even Dolomite, in a sense, was fighting the honkies, though. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, because I got a chance to watch Dolomite. I got a chance, actually, now that I think about it.
The Human Tornado.
A good bit of the blaxploitation movies. I didn't really think about it until just now that I'm thinking about it. Foxy Brown and all of them. I wasn't really a fan of none of them. But what I was saying was I can appreciate the fact that I got a chance to watch them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like they were passed down. They were passed on. And I don't know that The Last Dragon was, I know it was a black movie, but I don't know that it was created by black people. But
let me see who directed, but I don't know. But The Last Dragon, though, it was a real good movie that needed to be passed down.
Michael Schultz is the director. Okay,
who?
So wait, I can't tell if he's black or white from that picture. Okay, I think he's black.
Who you said it was?
It say Michael Schultz.
Michael Schultz.
Yeah, he's
okay,
black.
Okay, black dude.
Oh, shoot. Well, while we talking, I'm looking at his credits. Cooley High, Car Wash.
Oh, he did Cooley High?
Yeah.
Okay. He did Crush Cooley.
He might got another one right here, and I think he's still alive. Yep, he's still alive.
Michael Schultz. Okay. Cooley High director. See, Cooley High was the first hood movie.
My dude said the first hood movie.
But anywho, man, we want to make sure we give our shout out, give our love to John Singleton, though, man, because John Singleton was definitely a staple within the black community. And like I said, for creators, for artists, for thespians, directors, writers, producers, everybody who want to do something with film, John Singleton is somebody that we can look to and understand that we can. Not only can we do it, but we can do it at a high level. So one time for John Singleton.
Most definitely. One time for John Singleton. And, you know, pay attention to what we just did, because we just found out about Michael Schultz. And
yep.
So we need to show him his respect before
dragon.
He passed.
So last thing we want to talk about on this podcast today is May 2019. So that means it's time for our 2019 Black Women Celebration, and we use every May. Since last year, we use every May to shout out Black women who we think are alive. So the goal is, it's 30 days in May, 30 Black women get celebrated. So far, we've celebrated Miss Wyletta Mason Dunn, Miss Barbara Jo Williams, Miss Deanna Squeaky Miller, Miss Chelsea Collins, and Miss Jackson Richardson Sutton. All five of these women are significant people within the Tallahassee community, have done things, give their time, their space, the effort, the talents, use their talents to uplift, inspire, empower people through various realms. Ms. Wyletta Mason Dunn and Ms. Barbara Jo Williams are authors. Ms. Deanna Squeaky Miller, she's an artist, she's a singer. I love her voice. She has one of those sultry, nostalgic voices. I love her. Ms. Jessica Collins is an entrepreneur, outside the box thinker, trailblazer. She's co-founder of a mobile boutique called Novus Racks. And it's just like I think that's a brilliant idea, especially here in a town like this, where if she's still not the only one doing it, she was like the first one. And if she wasn't the first one doing it, she did it so well that she's the most noticed, the most notable person with a mobile rack in the city. I mean, a mobile boutique in the city that's named Novus Racks. And she's everywhere with her mobile boutique. And then also Miss Jasmine Richardson Sutton, who founded Zumba with the Chocolate Wasted Fitness. I like how she took the Chocolate Wasted Fitness. She's a dark-skinned woman who loves her chocolate. So she took that with Zumba and fitness and things. Now, in the caption that I made for her, I said, all superheroes don't wear capes. And I was thinking about it when I was putting the caption together for her. It's somebody who's offering fitness to Black women, especially like Black women, offering fitness alternatives to Black women to help expand the lives of these women, help these women get into shape and love themselves more. So we have more and more and more women coming. But Pat, like when we first came up with this idea of Black Women's Celebration, I know you was for it, but what kind of went through your mind and what spurred you to be like, hell yeah, man, let's do this with this Black Women's Celebration?
You know, we got the backstory to this, because there is a bit of backstory, at least from my perspective, and, you know, memory's fuzzy, so sometimes you add things that weren't really there, so you correct me if you don't remember something. But, you know, we have been talking about various ways to recognize Black women literally for years, because we hear that, we see the outcry, we see the disconnect, we see that Black women don't feel like they're being supported, they don't feel like anybody have their back, and they feel like, you know, they feel like they out here alone, on their own. And so we have been talking about it for a while, about, well, what can we do as Black men to show Black women that we love them, that we got their back, and that we appreciate them? And so when the idea of a Black woman's celebration came along, you know, and I say it came along because I really don't know how it happened step by step. I just remember us talking about it one day. It was just kind of like one of those, yeah, well, we can do what we could do. And what we can do is utilize our platform to celebrate Black women in the best way that we can now. And as we gain more ways to do it later, just continue building on the foundation of it. So it was just kind of exciting, not even in terms of growing or anything like that, because I know there are a lot of cynical people out there that will be like, market employee this or that or the third. It was just one of those things where I was truly excited that we were going to have the opportunity to show Black women that there are Black men out here that see you, that support you, that encourage you, and that really care about what you're doing. And we not trying to get over on you, sleep with you, or anything like that. It's just true love and excitement and support.
As Black men, it's our duty to uplift and empower our women and remind them of how lives they are, how beautiful they are, how significant they are, how important they are. As a historian, I just felt like I feel like my job would be incomplete if I go around. Well, I'd be ignorant as the story if I go around acting like I don't understand the significance of black women, the power of black women, how black women have been putting it down since as far back as I've been studying. Black women have never been second-class citizens until this Western world, until this European society and all these things here. You know, because Europeans have always had their women as second-class people. So, but black women have never been second-class. And for me, the celebration is, for one, like you said, let these women know. First of all, if ain't nobody else saying that, we see you, we recognize what you're doing. I know in this community sometimes, like my personality, sometimes I could be kind of quiet or whatever. I'd be laid back to myself. It depends on just how I am. So I may not, a lot of people may not know that I'm checking them out, admiring them, supporting them or whatever. So it's just, so if they didn't know, now they know, hey, man, I'm rocking with you. I like what you do, and I'm rocking with you. But I just think black women need, like you said, black women need a reminder that there are a significant number of black men who love, cares, and respect you and rocking with you and appreciate everything that you do for us in our communities and things, because you all are the one who keep our culture moving forward, keep our kids together, just hell, keep the men together a lot of times. Black women are in the unfortunate position a lot of having to be the heads and alphas and things like that because of, you know, the situations that we've been in, whether it's white supremacy induced or self-induced. So black women have to, we want y'all to understand that we love you all, we respect you all, we adore you all, you up on pedestals with us, and we just fans. We just, if anything I'm a fan of, I'm be fanatical about, it's a black one. Black women so live. They smell good, too.
All right, you just went weird.
No, they do smell good. With all the natural products that we wear, see? Damn, shout out to the women who wear the natural products and who make them, too.
What about all the women that don't wear natural products?
They still smell good, man, with the papaya smells and stuff. I just use papaya because it sounds good. Man, I'm trying to make me weird, dog.
Nah, you made yourself weird, homie.
Whatever, man. Whatever. Hey, man. So, who's a black woman, or who are some black women that have inspired you or still inspire you to this day?
Man, you know, I think we talked about this last year, and it really ain't changed for me. So I look at, obviously, I'm going to say my mama. Obviously. And you know what? We make jokes about that, but I look at anybody sideways that didn't say they mama. Not unless you got a real good reason. So, you know, obviously my mama, my wife would tell you that I really love my mama. I ain't a mama's boy or nothing, but I do love my mama. You know, and then there are a bunch of women that I don't want to name out individually because the list would be too long and I wouldn't want to forget anybody. And I know that's cliche, but it's true. Because I do follow a lot of women. Even with the Tiana Burke thing, when I found out that she created the Me Too movement, way, way, way back. It was way, 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 way back. I said her name wrong, didn't I?
Yeah, Tamara Cameron Burke or something like that, yeah.
Even when it comes to Miss Burke, you know, she was somebody that back in the day when I first found out that she created the movement, I looked into her and I found a lot there to admire. And, you know, things have progressed forward since then. But back when I first realized who she was and that she created the movement, when I look at the roles that women have taken in the black empowerment movement in terms of making sure that that's spooled up, you know, a black woman created the term intersectionality, you know, with regards to the different levels of oppression or privilege that can be prevalent in the society. You know, so when I just look at all of those things going on, black women taking the case to court about being a double minority and creating the negative stigma surrounding the first hired, last fired scenario, which created a whole lot of racial issues when it was used to terminate large chunks of black women who have been hired due to corporate leaders wanting to integrate, I believe it was a car manufacturing company, and later on deciding that they didn't want all these black people working for them, so they fired them all under the first hire, last fire rule. And that wasn't the only reason. There was some social constraints going on, but I'm trying to keep it brief. So there's that. I follow all of those women. I follow a lot of the women in the black feminist movement. And I know that's going to turn a lot of people off to hear me say black feminist. But when you really sit back and read those books by the Bells and the Hooks and all of these other women, and you really try to understand their perspective and where they're coming from, you can't help but admire the intelligence and the bravery that it takes for them to make the stances that they make, and for them to be able to articulate their views the way that they can articulate them, where you can only really find issue with them if you're not familiar with them, or if you haven't read these women say the things that they're saying in their own words. I mean, you can, of course, you can take issue with anything, but even in taking issue with it, you have to admire the way that they can articulate it in such a way that even if you disagree with how they feel, you understand what they're trying to convey. And then, you know, I bring it home and shut up with talking about looking at women closer to me that are doing things in the local community without seeking any fanfare. They just want to be good at what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? They're just trying to be the best in their sphere. They're not trying to be famous. They're not trying to be celebrities. You know, they're not trying to be super significant to the world as a whole. They just want to be good moms, good wives, good daughters, good aunties. You know, and we overlook the impact that these women have on our lives in terms of always being there to support us, providing that feminine energy, being able to nurture us when we're going through things. You know, you go through the list of all these successful people, and most of them are surrounded by nurturing women that have encouraged them and supported them along the way. And so with that, you know, I ought to say as well, I will say that I'm inspired a bit by, my wife as well, where everything that she's doing, everything that she's going through, the changes and challenges that she's attempting to make. We have our issues, of course, like all married people do. But when I just sit back and look at her as a person and what she's trying to accomplish in her life and the various things she's overcome and the various challenges that she's still trying to overcome and work through, you know, you can't help but admire that. So, you know, and then, of course, we can go down the line with all of the women that are involved in PACS and the Freedom Train Network and everything that we're doing together. It becomes, yeah, man, it's very much due and appreciated.
Man, it's a lot of amazing women out there who are doing that thing, especially like here in my city. The women got their stuff together a lot better than these men as far as working together, creating communities and doing things, going out, outings and different things. Just, it's a lot of things that the women do a whole lot better than these men. I don't know what's up with these dudes, right? But I be looking at these women, and I be like, man, all right, these women got they got it going on. And it's just like, I don't mind working with these women, I don't mind doing business with these women, I don't mind like celebrating these women, like doing all these different things, because Just watching them put together events, like put together empowerment events, put together talks, put together just certain things that they have going on. I'd be floored. The way they support each other, man, just like as a whole, the way the black women are supporting each other now, because a woman, and it frustrates me for us men, because women, I see a woman start something and watch how other women support her and help it grow. And I just be sitting there looking at other dudes like, God damn, why we can't do that? But I'm just impressed, from the women who are authors, from the women who are writers, producers, like women writing scripts. Remember the lady we Dr. A.L. Smith, who we interviewed years back, who said she was going to make her book into a movie. She made her book into a movie. Alicia Hall, we interviewed her. She's writing scripts and doing things like that. A lot of women are doing a lot of things that they said that they was going to do. They're putting it down. They're not sitting back waiting on people to do it for them. And that's to be admired. They're really leading the charge as far as entrepreneurs, leading the charge as far as influencers and people who are pushing the culture and moving things forward and going out, speaking out. Like, you made a good point about, like, a lot of the women who are activists who can be labeled as feminists or other things, whether a lot of men agree with the messages or not, like, these women are at the forefront of making sure that our communities are being safe. Now, with that being said, I hate the idea that somebody even has to put in their mind that black women have to save the world. To me, it ain't black women's job to save the world, but black women didn't mess the world up. So black women don't have to save the world. I just think black women just have to continue being awesome for themselves and our community and not worry about saving the world. Because it's up to a collective effort of everybody to save the world. It ain't black women's job to save the world. I just want black women to do what they do, just be awesome black women. And when it comes to saving the world, that should be a collective effort of everybody in the world. And it's not something that is a burden, that should be a burden on the shoulders of black women because other people, or because that's the narrative that just been put out there, that black women, it's up to them to save the world. No, it ain't. It ain't y'all job to save the world. It is, I swear, in my opinion, it ain't y'all job to save the world. Even though y'all are awesome, y'all are the ones who are like, pushing a lot of positivity and things forward. It's up to everybody to save the world because everybody messed it up. But, you know, black women are the women that are used the most by members of our own community and members of other community when other people want, you know, when people want to make stuff right, they go get a black woman. When people want to look like they're inclusive, they go get black women. So black women are praised and stepped on at the same time. So I just want to make sure we create a space, create something that black women know that this shit is unconditional when it's coming from us. Like, this ain't no gimmicks or anything like this, because, hey, we don't make no money from doing this Black Women's Celebration. But, hey, we're going to keep doing this because we just want black women to understand how much we admire them and care for them and want to just be a part of the celebration of our women, because, hell, if we don't do it, who else will?
So, word.
If you don't like black women, something wrong with you. You heard me?
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. And I definitely, you know, echo your sentiment about black women having to save the day. It is sad that they feel that way, and it's sad that people utilize them in that regard. But it also shows the level of strength that they have, that people will look at them to save a nation, and instead of them saying, fuck y'all, I ain't saving shit, or I don't have the energy or nothing like that, they take it on and they wear it as a mantle. You know, black women are saving the day, and I know that could be frustrating. You know, it can be frustrating for a lot of people looking at it. But even if you look at it from that perspective of, okay, well, this is a role that they've been, that's kind of been brought in, kind of been thrown at them. And instead of running from it or shirking it, they embraced it and manned up and they're facing it head on. That's admirable. So
it is, but I'm mad at whoever would put the idea that it's up to them to say the word. Like, hey, why you ain't signed up to say the goddamn word? Are you
gonna I definitely get you.
One demographic like that.
I definitely get you that it, and you know that the same thing could be said when we start talking about the psychology of the entire scenario of what's going on. So, you know, I definitely get you, definitely understand where you're coming from, but I'm looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, black women ain't never scared, man. They always, especially when they in groups, you know, they good or bad or worse or indifferent, however you want to phrase it, you know, there's a lot to be said for the strength that they bring into a situation and that they portray. So, you know, in celebrating them, we celebrate their strength because we as black men have gotten the opportunity to reap the benefits of that strength and to kind of grow as people underneath that strength. And, you know, like you said, it's not a publicity stunt. It's not nothing like that. You know, we love all women. All women deserve the love and the respect that we give them. They deserve probably a bit more than we give them. And, you know, the same thing I say every year, you know, as a man, I definitely think we can do more to recognize all women and show them that we hear you and we support you. And so that's one thing that I try to carry forward, you know, every day that I wake up, is making sure that, you know, it's understood that if there are problems in the community and men do want to be at the forefront of solving those problems and we do want to take our supposed roles as leaders in the community, that starts with acknowledging and respecting all women. And that starts with being there for our women and supporting our women. And so in that, I think what I've settled on is one of the greatest things we could do to really show black women the level of appreciation that they deserve is to get men to fuck together so that black women don't feel like they own.
We got to work. Us men who got our shit together got to put in work to make sure we get our other men together. There's a lot of fuck boys out there.
Right.
A lot of fuck boys. And ladies, I'm still single too. Just want to let y'all know I'm still single.
But I don't want to beat a dead horse and make it too mushy or too crazy or nothing like that. But I definitely think, you know, it's and that also comes from the women that I've talked to. I remember about five years ago now, I put out what I called an apology to the black women. And the responses that I got from black women that read it were telling. And, you know, it wasn't like no little bitty thing. Like, we got a lot of responses. And they were all basically saying, you know, what I just said. We appreciate the apology, but we don't want it. Fix the men. Like, get y'all shit together so that we can celebrate and be there with y'all. All right, message heard.
Yeah. But, and I, when I hear that, and I agree, but I also remind them that while we're fixing men, make sure you all fix you all selves as well, because I'm under the impression that we should be able to take information from other groups, but I don't like when men try to get down on women for things women do when these same men ain't spending time to fix men and vice versa. So I just have, in saying that, just reminding people, yes, it's not I'm not trying to be the tit for tat person, but understand, if black men concentrate on fixing black men, black women concentrate on fixing black women, but we also still take our cues and lessons from each other, then we'll be able to rise as a nation of people. So, just put that as it takes both parties.
Nah, Joe, you just opened a whole can of worms.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Just letting everybody know, hey, man, we all have work to do in our community. It's not just one thing where we can just say, hey, boy, this group needs to fix because this group needs to fix themselves because this other group is together. No, we all got work to do.
No, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying from that standpoint. I say you opened the can of worms because it's black women's celebration, and you just basically told black women that they need to get their shit together.
To that point you was making. That's all right. Well, hey, man, don't nobody love black women better than me, though. I tell you that.
No, I can definitely attest to that. Speaking of which, we got to get your sports segment for women's sports online so that we can show these black women athletes some more love, too.
Hey, man, I show black women athletes love all the time.
Definitely.
So yeah, we do need to get other people doing that. Though I think in our community, we could do a lot better job of showing our black athletes, black women athletes, more love. But I try to as much as possible talk about it as much as I can in my sports stuff. So.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, man. So what else you got going on in life that we need to promote that people need to know about so, you know, they can support you?
Nothing right now. You can ask me again next week. I would say people need to go to the PAX website, www.pacts.inc.org, PAXinc.org. Definitely get over to that website. Check it out. Become a member. Leave a review. Read a book. You know, take a survey. Do whatever. The support is definitely needed, and it's definitely wanted. So, you know, if you want to support anything that I got going on, or anything like that, and I'm not giving you a personal project that that you can support me through, you can always just head over to PAX.
Straight up, hey, amen. You know, support the network, Freedom Train Network, the various shows we have going on, this Freedom Train podcast series, Lessons from the Screen, the Fix Sports podcast, and the Enigma Set Hour. Make sure you support that. I get you a copy of my new book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, where I'm telling the various stories of sung and unsung heroes from a number of South American countries who contributed greatly to helping their people, their countries, and everything get better and fight white supremacy and Spanish rule and things like that. So tell the stories of 12 people, 12 to 13 people and one culture. So make sure you check my book out and all my books, my whole On the Shoulders of Giants series, just my whole On the Shoulders of Giants platform, www.ontheshouldersone.com. So do that. Yeah, that's it. That's it. Freedom Train, On the Shoulders of Giants, PAX Inc. Do that. And make sure you make an impact in your community as well. So what's your parting shot besides power to the people?
More power to the people.
More power to the people. He added the word more in the look at Pat being creative.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, till the next time. Y'all remember it's our Black Women Celebration Month. So when you see a black woman, go celebrate. When you see a black woman, rather, go celebrate her and celebrate her like you mean it. Till then, catch y'all next week.